want to dedicate today's shir for a refuah shalema for a couple of people. There is a family who are avid listeners of all of our series that we've had the last couple of weeks, and they have very graciously sponsored the shiurim for this week. So they are having two family members who are having a very serious surgery tomorrow morning, a transplant. That's a very difficult procedure. So one of them is David Herschel ben Fega, as well as Ben Sion ben Chaya Golda. They should have a refuah shlema bekar besoch shar chol Yisrael. As well as one of my first cousins is having a surgery actually as we speak, a very serious surgery in a hospital, a young child. His name is Aaron Yeshaya. We share the same name. That is my name. Aaron Yeshaya ben Yehudis. He should also have a refuah shlema besoch shar chol Yisrael. Our divrei Torah should be a schus for all of them. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you for making this summer so meaningful for all of us. I don't know if you understand how much we as presenters learn from knowing that we have a very serious audience that's waiting to hear something that is well prepared. So we have to work very hard, but it makes us grow, and it makes us have a very meaningful experience out of all the learning that we do as well. So thank you to everybody who participated and to everybody who made this such a beautiful success and such a great Kiddush Hashem. Just so you know, this is the first of many opportunities that we will share together to have Torah experiences, to have meaningful thoughts shared with one another. Just by a show of hands, how many people are interested and are around on Labor Day to do something, okay? So maybe we'll try to put something together on Labor Day of some sort of interest to people, and we'll try to work with that. And then going forward, we'll also try to do some other things. So let's begin today's shiur with the mitzvah of Havdalah. We spoke in the past couple of weeks about Halakas Neir Shabbos. We spoke about Kiddush, and now we make it through a whole Shabbos. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about Shabbos, and we cannot do that in one session, so I figured we'll talk about Havdalah, which is somewhat a continuation from the mitzvah of Kiddush. And we begin with the Rambam. We quoted a couple of times already. The Rambam writes in Perek Chavtes from Hilchas Shabbos, Halacha Aleph, that is the first entry on the source sheet. This is a Rambam that we've quoted, and this is why Havdalah is really a segue straight in from Kiddush. And why is that? Because the Rambam writes as follows, Mitzvah Esei min HaTorah leKadesh es Yom HaShabbos bidvarim. We have a mitzvah min HaTorah to be Mekadesh Shabbos bidvarim. And we spoke about that before. How do we do it? Do we do it in our Shemona Esrei? Do we do it when we get home and make Kiddush? And we're going to talk about that also today, about how exactly we're able to make Havdalah. Are we supposed to be doing that in Shul when we say Atachon Antanu? Are we supposed to be doing that in our Shmona Esrei? Are we supposed to be doing it on a cup of wine? We'll talk about that soon. So the Rambam says, how do we know you're supposed to be Mekadesh es HaShabbos bidvarim shenemar? Because it says, Zachar es Yom HaShabbos lekadsho. Now, Kolomar, Zachreu Zachiras Shvach v'kiddush. You have to say something unique and something special about the distinction of Shabbos above the rest of the days of the week. V'tzarech lizachrehu b'knisaso v'yitziyuaso. Says the Rambam. One has to make a remembrance of the fact that Shabbos is unique, both in the beginning of Shabbos as well as in the end of Shabbos. You have to show that Shabbos is unique by making on the bookends. You have to show that Shabbos is different by saying Kiddush at the beginning and saying Havdalah at the end. So what do you see from the Rambam? The Magid Mishnah, which is one of the commentaries on the side of the Rambam, points out that what you see from this Rambam is that the same way we discussed a couple of weeks ago that Kiddush is the Oraisa, because it says Zachar es Yom HaShabbos leKadsho, that's the Gemara Pesachim Daf Kuf Vav. Well, similarly, says the Rambam, part of that mitzvah, subsumed under that category of Zachar es Yom HaShabbos leKadsho, was also the mitzvah to recite Havdalah. So this is the opinion of the Rambam. This is the opinion of many Acharonim, of the Magen Avraham, of the Mishneh Berurah, that Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos is in fact a mitzvah de Araisa. There are many Rishonim who disagree. The Rosh in his Tshuva says that no, he holds that Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos is only midrabanan. The mitzvah of Zachar es Yom HaShabbos leKadsho is only to point out the significance of Shabbos at the beginning of Shabbos. Why? Because you're trying to usher in the Shabbos with extra Kedusha. So the Rosh and other Rishonim assume that that is only a mitzvah that comes at the beginning of Shabbos. What we do at the end of Shabbos, the Havdalah, that is not connected at all to what we do at the beginning of Shabbos. So you'll say, what's the difference? Whether it's Daraisa, whether it's Darabanan, doesn't really make a difference. Well, the difference would be as follows. We spoke a few weeks ago at length about the concept of women not being obligated to fulfill a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. When you have a time-bound mitzvah, the women do not have to fulfill those mitzvahs, and we spoke about why they don't have to do it, but we assume that women are exempt from fulfilling those mitzvahs. However, we do have many exceptions to the rule. One of those exceptions was what? The mitzvah of Kiddush. Why is the mitzvah of Kiddush an exception? It's mitzvah saseisha hazman grama. You only have to do it once a week. You only have to do it on Shabbos. So why should women have to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush if in fact it is a time-bound mitzvah? Well, the reason why is because the Gemara says, we learn out, Zachar v'shamar b'dibur echad nemru. Since Zachar and Shamar were said somewhat simultaneously, something that we generally are not able to speak. We can't utter two words at the same time. We can't hear two things at the same time. Still, Zachar and Shamar were said at the very same time. And therefore, Zachar, which means the positive commandments of Shabbos, and Shamar, which means the negative commandments of Shabbos, says the Gemara, those who are obligated to keep the negative commandments of Shabbos must also keep the positive commandments of Shabbos. And therefore, the same way a woman would not be allowed to violate, she wouldn't be allowed to be mechalel Shabbos on any given week, even though the averus of Shabbos, let's say to do malacha on Shabbos is only something that comes once a week, still we would assume that a woman would be obligated to keep to all the lo saseh of Shabbos, to all the negative commandments of Shabbos. And since that is the case, the Gemara assumes that therefore a woman is also responsible to keep all the positive commandments of Shabbos. So therefore the Gemara says, a woman must recite Kiddush the same way a man has to recite Kiddush. Why? Because even though it's a time-bound mitzvah, because Zachar v'shamar b'dibur echad nemru. So now explains the Rambam. If you assume that the mitzvah of Kiddush is not only to say Kiddush at the beginning of Shabbos, but it's also to say Havdalah at the end of Shabbos, well then the same way we assume that a woman is mechuyevus to say Kiddush at the beginning of Shabbos, well then a woman also must say Havdalah at the end of Shabbos, because it's part of the same mitzvah. If we assume Zachar v'shamar b'dibur echad nemru tells us that women have to say Kiddush, that also means women have to say Havdalah. However, if you assume that Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos is a totally separate mitzvah, and it's not connected at all to the mitzvah of Kiddush at the beginning of Shabbos, well then, there's room to argue that maybe women are not responsible, or not mechuyev to say Havdalah at the end of Shabbos, at the conclusion of this period of Shabbos. So this is a major, major discussion. Now we look in Shulchan Aruch, you look in the second entry on the source sheet, how do we paskin? Do women have to say Havdalah? Or do women not have to say Havdalah? Which really hinges on this question. Should we assume that Havdalah is really a part of the greater mitzvah of Kiddush, which means you have to bookend Shabbos and highlight how special it is by making Kiddush in the beginning and Havdalah at the end? Or do we assume that Havdalah is something totally different? It's a time-bound mitzvah and women would not have to keep to it. Well, says the Shulchan Aruch, Nashim chayavos b'Havdalah. Women must recite Havdalah. Kishem shechayavos b'Kiddush. So he's quoting the Rambam. The Rambam is of the opinion that Kiddush is something a woman has to do, therefore Havdalah is something they have to do as well. However, as we find very often in Shulchan Aruch, we get very confused when we read it. Because the Shulchan Aruch here writes, unequivocally you must say it. Then he says, V'yesh mishacholik. There are those who disagree. So now what? Are women chayiv to make Havdalah or not? Well, says the Ramah often makes a compromise opinion. Well, some say a woman has to say, some say a woman doesn't have to say. So what are you going to do? Rama writes, Al kein lo yavdilu la'atzman rak yishmu havdala min ha'anashim. This is where the practice comes from, that women try to hear havdala from a man. Why should we assume a woman should try to hear from a man? Because we're not sure in the first place whether or not a woman is mechuyevus to say havdala at all. So the Shulchan Aruch again quotes both opinions, and therefore the Rama makes the compromise opinion for Ashkenazim, that the woman tries to hear from a man. However, the Mishnah Berurah points out, which is a very important thing to notice, and that is, Mishnah Berurah writes that b'shas hadchak, which means, you have extenuating circumstances. The man of the house is away on business. The man of the house is no longer alive. What are you going to say? Every week, the woman has to go to somebody else's house to go and hear Havdalah? That's a tremendous inconvenience. Take, for example, a woman has young children at home. All the kids are sleeping. Shabbos is over 7, 8 o'clock. The kids are already sleeping by the time the man comes home from shul. So she's mechuyev to wake up all the kids to go next door to the neighbor and hear Havdalah. So that's something that's not really a reasonable expectation. So therefore we would assume, says the Mishnah Berurah, that we revert back to the Ikar Hadin. And really, strictly speaking, we assume like the Rambam that Havdalah is a mitzvah the same way Kiddush is a mitzvah. And the same way women have to say Kiddush, so too women have to say Havdalah. Therefore, if it's extenuating circumstances and it's very difficult for the woman to go hear Havdalah from somebody else, she does not have to do so. She's allowed to say Havdalah on her own. She should say Havdalah on her own. And this is what we assume. You get to a question, let's say, that comes up quite often. What about hearing Havdalah over the phone? So this is a major question. Sometimes you have people who are in their own homes and they don't want to make Havdalah because they know that women are not generally accustomed to making Havdalah on their own. So they call one of their children, and they want to listen over the phone. So is this proper or not? So many assume that it's really not the right thing to do. The same way that we would not be able to be Yotzei Mikra Megillah over the phone, right? You would never say, oh, I'll stay home, and I'll just call somebody. I'll put the cell phone on speaker, and that's good enough. Why do we assume it's not good enough? Because we don't assume that that's really the voice of the person who's speaking on the other end. And therefore, we assume that generally one should not be Yotzei Havdalah in such a case by listening over the phone. Better, instead of listening over the phone, better would be for a woman to make on her own. Really, Me'ikar Adin, strictly speaking, we assume, a woman is allowed to make Havdalah on her own. The Rama says a compromise opinion. If it's possible and it's not too hard, the woman should try to listen from someone else. If the option is either for the woman to make Havdalah on her own or to listen over the phone to somebody else, the better option would be to make Havdalah on her own and not listen to somebody making Havdalah over the phone. So this is something that's very relevant, something that's very important, and it's something that comes up all the time. Rav Asher Weiss did write a tshuva recently in which he argues listening over the phone is okay, but the general consensus out there is that listening over the phone is something that is not desired. It's not the right way to do it. And the better way to do it would be for the woman to recite her own Havdalah, because it's difficult for her to go out of the house and hear from someone else, or it's difficult for her to have somebody come to her house and recite the Havdalah for her. There is a discussion, even though we assume like the Rambam, that women are really chayiv in Havdalah the same way men are. This is the general opinion, the general consensus that the Shulchan Aruch assumes. Me'ikar Adin, that Kiddush and Havdalah are part of the same mitzvah, they're all subsumed under this category of Zachar as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. The Bir Halacha, which is the Mishnah Berurah's comments on the Shulchan Aruch, the Bir Halacha points out that even if you assume that a woman has to recite Havdalah because Zachar as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho dictates that you have to make the bookends of Shabbos special, still, says the Mishnah Berurah, maybe we should assume that the Birchas Haner, that the Bracha of Bori Ma'ori Ha'esh, is something that the woman does not have to make. Because if you're going to say that the whole obligation of the woman is only because of Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, well, what does Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho obligate you to say? It just obligates you to say how special Shabbos is, how different it is. So which part of Havdalah do you highlight the specialness of Shabbos? When you say Hamavdim and Kodesh L'Chol and Or L'Choshech, when you say that part, not when you say the Bori Mari Ha'esh, that has nothing to do with Shabbos. So therefore the Bir Halacha argues that even if you want to say that women are obligated to say Havdalah, they might not be obligated to say Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh. And this is the real official reason. How many people in the room, no, we don't have to show hands, but how many people in the room have heard about this old fairy tale that the women should not drink from the wine of Havdalah because they're going to grow a beard? It has absolutely no makor in Halacha at all. That is something that has no presence in Halacha at all. So where does it come from, that women should not drink the wine of Havdalah? So you'll say, well, many different reasons that are given. One very simple reason that's given is because they say that Chava is the one who made Adam HaRishon do the mistake. And the Gemara in Brachas has one opinion that perhaps what created that mistake was, it was a Geffen. The Eitz Hadas was a, there are three different opinions in the Gemara exactly what that Eitz Hadas was. So some say it was a tree that was giving off, it was a vine, it was a vineyard, it was giving off grapes. That was the mistake that happened. So because of that, Chava, who's the one who caused all the problems in the world, so we don't want the women to drink the wine because the wine is going to remind us of that terrible sin that happened on Shabbos. Okay, it's a far-fetched reason. What's the real reason? What's the real reason why women don't drink the wine of Havdalah? You want to know what the real reason is? The real reason is because the Bir Halacha says over here that perhaps women don't have an obligation to say Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh. So imagine like this. Imagine, I make a bracha shehakol niyeh bedvar. I'm about to drink a cup of water. And before I have the drink, what do? I get a phone call. So I pick up my phone and say, hello. So now what's the din? Can I drink my cup of water? No, you have to make a bracha again. Why? Because you made a hefsik in between your bracha and the drinking. You always have to make the bracha right before you drink the cup of water. Well, so too over here. What do you make? Borei pri hagafen. Right? We say that at the beginning of Havdalah. Then we continue and we say, Borei midei besamim, Borei mari ha'esh, Hamavdu ben kodesh l'chol. So Chazal instituted that you have to say all of that as part of the Havdalah. But for a woman who might not have to say all of that, for a woman who doesn't have to say Borei mari ha'esh, because it's a time-bound mitzvah and she's not mechuyev to say it, all she has to do, says the Bir Halacha, is to recite the specialness of Shabbos. Well, then for her to be mafsik in between the Borei pri hagafen and the drinking of the wine which comes at the end, for her to be mafsik and say amnein, when we say bari mari ha'esh, that will constitute a hefsik. And therefore now she's not allowed to drink the wine because she may have been mafsik in between the bori pri agafen and the drinking of the wine. This is the official reason why women do not drink the wine for Havdalah. Nothing to do with beards, nothing at all, I'm not sure where that came from. But that is the real halachic reason why women do not have the practice of drinking the wine from Havdalah. So now, any questions so far? Okay. So now, we know that Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos is either a mitzvah d'oraisa or a mitzvah midrabbanan. As we said, it's very important to know that because that is what's going to determine whether women are obligated to say Havdalah every Matzah Shabbos or not. Again, if you assume Havdalah is d'oraisa, like the Rambam says, and it's subsumed under this category of Zachar es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, then women are obligated just like they're obligated in Kiddush. If you assume it's a totally different mitzvah, Havdalah is something that's separate, it's isolated, it's not connected at all to Kiddush, then we would assume that women are not obligated. Again, just to review, even if you assume that women are obligated in Havdalah, midaraisa like Kiddush, they might not be obligated in reciting the bracha of Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh, because that's not connected at all to Shabbos. So now, what's important to know is that there's a whole backstory to Havdalah. The backstory the Gemara gives is that Havdalah was an evolutionary process. It didn't start off the way we have it. So let's look at the Gemara together, the third entry on the source sheet, number Gimel. We have a Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Gimel Aleph. Says the Gemara as follows. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah Tiknu Brachos. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, which were the Chachamim in the times of the Gemara, instituted many different brachos as we know them. These brachos that we say, many brachos that we say, were not midaraisa. Many brachos that we say, almost all of them, except for two, the only two exceptions that are daraisa, the only two brachos that we say that are daraisa are Birchas HaMazon and Birchas HaTorah. Everything else, all the brachos that we are accustomed to say throughout the day and throughout the year, all of those were instituted midrabbanan. So says the Gemara. So when it came to Havdalah, B'tchila Kavua B'tfila, in the original enactment of saying Havdalah, what the Chachamim said is you should recite Havdalah in the context of your Shmona Esrei. And then says the Gemara, later on, Heshiru, people then became wealthier and they had money to afford wine. Kavu alakos, after people now had money to afford wine and recite Havdalah and a cup of wine, so now the Chacham said, don't say it in Shmona Esrei anymore. It will highlight the bracha even more. It will make the bracha even more special if you recite it on a cup of wine. Like we said in the first year that we gave on Hilchos Kiddush, Sefer HaChinuch writes, Jews like to eat, Jews like to party. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, we're going to have a more meaningful experience if we do the Havdalah experience on a cup of wine. The same way, if we make Kiddush on a cup of wine, it's going to make it more meaningful for us. So therefore, when the Jewish people later on in generations had money, so then they instituted that no longer should Havdalah be recited in davening, Havdalah now should be recited over a cup of wine once the person gets home. Then, the Gemara says, history repeated itself, Hanu. Now people, once again, did not have money. People were poor again. So now what do we do? So the Chachamim changed the rules again, and they said, Chazur v'kavua b'tfila. Chachamim said, you know what? Scratch the first idea. Let's go back to the original idea. And the original idea was, recite Havdalah in your Shmona Esrei, and now that nobody has money anymore to afford a cup of wine, let's go back to the first plan, which was to only recite it in Shmona Esrei and not have to do it over a cup of wine. You want to move? See, the sun is it's probably bothering you. Okay. So then the Gemara says, "Vehei Mamru." The bottom line is, "Hamavdu b'tfila tzarach lahavdil alakos." The bottom line, as we know it, is that the Chachamim said the best thing to do is to recite Havdalah both in our Shmona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos, and also to recite Havdalah over a cup of wine. It's a two-pronged process that we have going on. On the one hand, we say Havdalah in the davening. On the other hand, we say Havdalah in our homes on a cup of wine. Now, the Ramah points out, what if you have, let's say, most women, I would imagine, do not daven Maariv on Matzah Shabbos. So if you don't daven Maariv on Matzah Shabbos, and you're waiting for the man to come home to make Havdalah, let's say, or for somebody to make Havdalah for you, The Ramah points out that it's very important that we teach the women to say Hamavdu ben Kodesh Lechol, Baruch Hamavdu ben Kodesh Lechol, because one is not allowed to do malacha. Just because Shabbos is over and it's dark outside, that is not going to permit me to do malacha. The only way I'm permitted to do malacha is when I make some sort of havdalah. So for those who daven Shmona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos and they recite Atachon Antanu, they recite the havdalah in the Shmona Esrei, now they are allowed to do malacha, which is why the men are allowed to drive home from shul after Shabbos is over. However, for those who have not recited Shmona Esrei, the Ramah writes it's important that we tell people that they have to be careful to say Baruch Hamavdu ben Kodesh Lechol. What's the halacha for those who might be interested in davening Shmona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos? There are those who might have time and who might be able to. So what's the halacha if, let's say, you forget to say Atachon Antanu? Why? What do you do then? What if you forget to say Atachon Antanu? As we know, Atachon Antanu is recited right in the beginning of the brachas of Shmona Esrei. You say it in the first bracha, Atachon and Ladam Das, and then you say Atachon Antanu. So what if you forget to say it? So the Shulchan Aruch assumes that you do not repeat it. You don't repeat Shmona Esrei, certainly. And you don't even recite it in Shema Koleinu. You don't even say it later on in Shmona Esrei. Once you forgot it, forget about it. You can just say the Havdalah later on the cup of wine, and that's good enough. That's the way we assume. Now, the Ramah, as we said, in Simen Reish Tadi Tes, the Ramah pointed out that it's important to be mazir the nashim, he says. It's important to remind the women that if they're not going to say Shmona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos, if they're not going to daven Maariv, we have to remind them to say Baruch HaMavdu Ben Kodesh Lechol, and that will allow them now to do Malacha. Now, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had a very simple problem. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach died around 20 years ago. So Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that you have many people, let's say you take our example is, we go daven by the Kotel on Matzah Shabbos, right? We go for Mincha, it's nice weather outside already, not too hot, so we walk for Mincha, we stay for Shalosh Shittos there, and we have Maariv. And then after Shabbos, how do we get back? So we take a taxi. So we get in the taxi, and then when we get to our apartment or our hotel, we ask the taxi, wait for us, we're going to bring money down, right? That's, I assume, a lot of people have that practice. So ask them, Shlomo Zalman, how are we allowed to do that? How many people in Eretz Yisrael that are taxi drivers are not religious Jews? I assume most of the taxi drivers that we would be comfortable taking are probably not Arabs, right? So most of the taxi drivers that we want to take are going to be non-religious Jews who have just come right away after Shabbos is over. They're ready, waiting by the Kotel to take us. Ask them, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, how are we allowed to take a ride from them? Aren't we causing them to be Mechal Shabbos? They have not recited Havdalah. They haven't davened Shmona Esrei. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was so concerned. How can I ever get to a taxi? How can I ever get onto a bus after Shabbos is over if in fact I'm causing somebody else to be Mechal Shabbos and they have not yet recited Havdalah? As we know, it says, the Ramah tells us, if you don't daven Shmona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos, if you don't say Havdalah, you have to make sure to say Baruch HaMavdu Ben Kodesh Lechol. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had the practice, he was careful, that every time he got into a taxi on Matzah Shabbos, he would first, before getting in, he would wait for the guy to roll down the window and he would say, Agutavach, Shavua Tov. Why would he do that? In order that would serve as some sort of Havdalah for this person, to say that now Shabbos is over. Once the person says back to him Shavua Tov, means he's acknowledging the fact that Shabbos is over and now the week is beginning. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to be careful to do that. Something to consider, it's something to keep in mind. One of Reb Shlomo Zalman's contemporaries, who was the Tzitz Eliezer, he was the Rav of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, he's a very big tzaddik on his own. So he wrote a whole attack against Reb Shlomo Zalman that he thought that was not going to be sufficient. Because he wrote that the point of saying Kiddush, and at the same time the point of saying Havdalah, is not just to say Shabbos is over, Shabbos is beginning. Imagine you sit down Friday night and you say, Shabbos is here. Were you Yotzei Yechiyuv of Kiddush? No. You weren't Yotzei Yechiyuv of Kiddush. Says that Tzitz Eliezer, what you do in order to fulfill your Chiyuv of Kiddush is, you have to say something unique about Shabbos. When we say in Havdalah, HaMavdu Ben Kodesh Lechol, Ben Or Lechoshech, we highlight the uniqueness of Shabbos. We highlight the difference that Shabbos has over and above the rest of the days of the week. It's not good enough, argued the Tzitz Eliezer, just to say, Agutavach Shavua Tov. That's not good enough. That's not going to be a requisite Havdalah to really say that Shabbos is so unique. So he said, what does it help if Shlomo Zalman's practice when he gets into the taxi, he says Shavua Tov? What does that help? The taxi driver still did not really fulfill his obligation of Havdalah. Okay, so it's a good point. But at the same time, you try to do what you can. You're not going to be able to save the world. You can't do everything. So at least what you should try to do is do something to make sure that the person at least acknowledges that Shabbos is now over, and now we're going into the days of the week. What you see, just to point out, you see how sensitive Gedolei Yisrael are. You see how sensitive they are. Reb Shlomo Zalman is sitting and thinking and worrying about the taxi cab driver. What does he care? Nowadays, what would we say? A bomb, a machal Shabbos. What's my problem? Let him suffer. Let him burn. That's not the attitude that we have. That's not the attitude that we have. We're careful about every Jew. We're careful about everybody's feelings. We're careful to be medaktik on everyone's shmiras hamitzvos. And even though he's a machal Shabbos, we do our best to make his chilul Shabbos as little as possible. We try to limit it as much as we can. This is the greatness of Reb Shlomo Zalman. It reminds me, on Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's yard site one year, I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I was in the car with Rav Asher Weiss. We were coming back from a shiur that he gave, and he was telling me different stories about Reb Shlomo Zalman that he had remembered. So he told me that he heard a story. There's a Chaver Knesset whose name is Meir Parish. So Meir Parish is a more yeshivish Chaver HaKnesset, and he was arguing for many, many years that they should close off certain streets in Yerushalayim on Shabbos, because it's not right. Why is it fair we have Haredi neighborhoods? Nobody drives on Shabbos. Why is it fair that we should have traffic driving through our neighborhood? So he was fighting with the government for years that they should close off certain streets, and they should not have people driving through on Shabbos, because he felt it's not good for the kids to see all the Chilul Shabbos going on. It's not good for the adults. It's not a Shabbos atmosphere. Okay. Finally, he gets the okay. Mayor Parish finally gets the okay after years and years of fighting and heckling to have this done. Finally, he gets the okay from the government that they're going to go ahead. And they drew up a map exactly of where they're going to close off the streets, Shmuel Hanavi, in different streets. They're going to close them on Shabbos. So he says, before I sign it, I need to go visit Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So the mayor of Yerushalayim is looking at him. Here you are, you're fighting for so many years that you want this to be get done, you want it to get done. Finally, I give you the map. You say you got to go to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Just sign the piece of paper. Let's get this through. So he goes to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and Reb Shlomo Zalman looks at him. He says, how dare you make such a thing? He says, what do you mean? He says, imagine you have somebody who needs to get to the other side of town. So think about what you're doing. There are many, many Jews in Eretz Yisrael who are Mechal Shabbos, who don't know yet about Shabbos, who are going to be driving on Shabbos. What are you going to make them do? Now, because you closed off the streets, you're going to make them go do more Chilul Shabbos, because they're going to have to go around all the street blockades, and they're going to have to take a longer route to get to the place where they have to go. You want that on your head? That more Shabbos is going to be created because of you? It's very nice that you want your children to have an experience of Shabbos. You don't want them to see a car in the street. But what about thinking about the other side? What about thinking about the irreligious Jew who now, number one, is going to be angry at the Haredim for closing off the streets, and number two, more practically, he's going to be Mechal Shabbos more than he otherwise would have. He would have had a direct route to get to his home, and now he can't. Now he has to be Mechal Shabbos more because he has to circumvent all of the road blockades that you put up that you shouldn't have Chilul Shabbos in your neighborhood. Is that correct? Is that proper? Said Reb Shlomo Zalman, I think we need to think about it. It's not so simple. So you see the way we're supposed to be thinking. That's something that you learn from all of this, that there's a way that we're supposed to be thinking, in a sensitive way, in a sensitive manner, something to consider, that it's not always about our gain. Sometimes we have to think about what it's going to be for the greater world, and obviously for the Jewish people as well. So why is it, when we have Havdalah b'tfila, when we have Havdalah in our Shmona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos, why is it that we instituted to say the Havdalah, the Chonen Hadas, why do we say Atachon Antanu in that first bracha and Atachon in L'Adam Das? What is the connection between Atachon in L'Adam Das and this bracha of Havdalah? For example, you have somebody who's sick. Rachmana Litzlan, you have a chola. So where do you recite the tefillah for the chola? In Rifa'enu, because it's connected to the bracha of Rifa'enu, so you have a right to add something into that bracha. A person, unfortunately, doesn't have a parnasa, so do you add that in? Baruch Aleinu. Why? Because Baruch Aleinu is when we talk about God giving us all of our parnasa, sustaining us with everything that we need. So that's where we add it in. So why do we add Atachon Antanu? Why do we add the Havdalah portion into the first bracha of the Shemona Esrei, which is Atachon El Adam Das? What is the connection between Atachon El Adam Das and the Havdalah? So there are two reasons given. Reason number one is because the Yerushalmi tells us that it's Asr La'adam Levakish Tzirachav B'Shabbos. A person is not allowed to make personal requests on Shabbos. You look through the Shemona Esrei, it's interesting. The Shabbos Shemona Esrei is totally different from the Shemona Esrei that we daven during the week. Why is that? So you'll say it's because of Bakasha. Not really, it's a trick question. Because the Gemara says, really, you're allowed to daven Shemona Esrei on Shabbos, just the Chachamim lo atrichu rabbanan. The Chachamim didn't want to bother us too much. They didn't want to keep us in shul too long. Davening was long enough as is, so they decided we're going to shorten the Shemona Esrei. But another reason that's what to consider is that you're really not supposed to make personal bakashas on Shabbos. And why is that? The Beis Yosef quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah that the reason why is because we want somebody to have the full experience of Onik Shabbos. Imagine, you're going to be sitting at your Shabbos table and thinking and talking about this terrible deal that you had this week and terrible business and everything's terrible and nothing's going well. It's not going to give you Onik Shabbos. You're going to be sad. You're going to be upset about it. So therefore, we assume you're not supposed to make personal bakashas because it's going to lead you to cry on Shabbos. It's going to lead you to be sad. And because it's going to lead you to have feelings of emotions of sadness, therefore, we assume one should not go ahead and say personal bakashas, personal requests on Shabbos. And therefore, over here, when we're about to say the Shemona Esrei on Matzah Shabbos, when we're about to begin starting over again with our personal request, the first thing we need to do before going ahead and reciting a weekday Shemona Esrei is to make Havdalah. Why? Because what allows us to make personal requests? Only one Shabbos is over. So therefore, in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, before we finish that bracha, what we do is we recite the Havdalah paragraph, which now gives us an allowance to go ahead and say all the rest of the brachas of Shemona Esrei, which are personal bakashas. The Beis Yosef even writes, maybe the practice should be that one shouldn't even say harachaman in benching on Shabbos. Why? Because harachaman, what do we ask for? All sorts of things. Harachaman hu yifarnu seina b'chavod. Harachaman hu yishbar aleinu mi'atzarenu. We're making all sort of personal requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we say harachaman. And there are those who say you should not say harachaman at all on Shabbos. We certainly have the practice to leave out some of the harachamans in the middle. But some say you shouldn't say them at all. Why is that? Because one is not supposed to ask for personal rakashas on Shabbos. Yes? It's a good question. Good question. So why do we all have the practice to say a tefillah when we light Shabbos candles? It's a good question. I think one of the answers is, if you look through the Shemona Esrei on Shabbos, what do we say? Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu Ritzeivim Nuchaseinu Katsheinu B'mitzvosecha Avoseinu Chalkeinu B'sarasecha. That's a personal request. What am I asking for? I want to be holy. I want to be special. I want to keep your mitzvahs. I want to learn your Torah. So how do we have a right to do that? The answer is because it's a personal request, but it's a spiritual request. That's not going to make me sad on Shabbos. That's going to make me very happy if God actually gives me that. So what do we ask for? I've never said the tefillah, but I think, from what I know, the tefillah is all about spiritual requests, right? We ask that we should have children who are healthy and children who are going to be Yirei Shamayim, children who are going to do the right thing, stay on the right path. So we're asking for spiritual things, which I think is similar to what the Shemona Esrei that we all daven on Shabbos is, I think. Maybe. The second reason that's given as to why we recite the Havdalah specifically in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, Atachon el Adam Das, is because Tosfos says in Maseches Pesachim, Im Ein Das Havdalah Minayin, which is such a critical line. Im Ein Das Havdalah Minayin. If a person doesn't have logic, if a person doesn't have deep understanding, how are you going to be able to differentiate between certain things? How are you going to be able to prioritize? So this is why we say, I mean, the same way if you have a chola in the house, the same way if you have somebody who's sick, you would recite a special tefillah, a special offering in Rifa'enu, because that's directly connected to that bracha. Well, so too over here says Tosfos, if you don't have das, if you don't have a mind, if you don't have deep understanding to what happens in the world, then havdalah minayin. How are you going to be able to differentiate, to prioritize between what's really important in life and what is only secondary importance? Now this reminds me of something that the Lublina Rav, which was a Meir Shapiro, pointed out. He said about American Jews, and this was Meir Shapiro lived in, he started Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, he lived a little over 100 years ago. So he said about American Jewry that they know how to make Kiddush, but they don't know how to make Havdalah. What does that mean? Meir Shapiro was sort of making fun of us, and he was saying that we put the wrong emphasis on the wrong things. You know, we emphasize so much certain things that are such narishkeit. Like, you know, we all take very seriously the idea that a pregnant woman should not go to a cemetery. Where does that come from? Anybody know? I don't either. But that became Halacha Moshe Misinai. This is something, if you violate it, they'll call you a shegetz, and I'm ours. What are you doing here? Okay, we don't need to get into this example so much. Okay, so we can talk about that afterward. Okay, we can talk about that afterward, but this is, well, I'm just mean to give an example. You know, we take the red band so seriously. This is like, you know, halacha l'moshe m'sina. What's going to be if I lose that thing? What's going to be? We take skulas and superstitions so seriously. That's what Rameir Shapiro was saying. We don't know how to differentiate. We don't know how to distinguish. We know how to make kiddush. We make something holy, which is not holy. We give it very special significance, even though it's insignificant. And we somehow neglect some things that are very important for us to focus on. Some of the mitzvahs that we're supposed to be keeping, some of the things that we're supposed to put our attention to, somehow get thrown aside and cast away, and we don't really pay attention to the things that we're supposed to be. This is what Tosas means. Im ein das havdala minayin. If we don't have an understanding of what the real important things are in the world, how are we supposed to have a concept of Havdalah? If we don't have a mind, how are we going to ever be able to be Mavdu Ben Kodesh L'chol? It just doesn't make sense. What do we say? Many people have the practice to say on Matzah Shabbos. Hamavdu Ben Kodesh L'chol, Chatoseinu Hu Yimchol, right? We have a pismon, we have a piyut that some people recite after Shabbos is over, after Havdalah. And if you look at the words, you look at an art scroll, exactly what those words mean. What we're trying to say is, yes, now we've made Havdalah, and we've made a choice between Kodesh and Chol, and we've differentiated for ourselves what is supposed to be holy, what is supposed to be sacred, and what is not, what is supposed to be mundane. And therefore we ask God that even though we've made mistakes and we've violated some of the mitzvahs of the Torah, by not appreciating enough what is supposed to be Kodesh in our lives and what is not, Chatoseinu Hu Yimchol, we want you to get over it. We want you to overlook it, because now we're coming to a new understanding of what the difference between Kodesh and Chol is. This is what the tefillah is. This is what we say on Matzah Shabbos. So it's very funny. What do we say at the end of that? The end of that line. Zareinu v'chaspeinu yarbar kachol. Does that make any sense? What did we just say? Hamavdim in Kodesh l'chol. Now we've come to a deep understanding of the difference between Kodesh and Chol. Chatoseinu Hu Yimchol. Therefore, you in turn should forgive us for the sins that we've transgressed, because now we're coming to an understanding, we're not going to do it again, because now we understand what's important in life, what's priority, what we're supposed to give priority to, and what is only secondary. So what's the next line? Zareinu v'chaspeinu, we're mixing up, we're lumping everything together, our children and our money, yarber kachol. What do you mean? Are those two things similar? That sounds like the biggest mix-up of Kodesh and Chol, that a person can't figure out how to differentiate between his children and his money. So what are we asking for? What does this mean? So Rav Schwab points this out. If I'm not mistaken, I think Rav Schwab has it in his Sefer on Chumash, Ma'ayin Beis HaShoeva. So he has it there. Really, he's talking about the context of Hanukkah, which we're not going to get into now. But he makes a comment which is very powerful in my opinion. Rav Schwab writes that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told that he should take a Machatzis HaShekel from the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, at a certain point in history, I want you to take a matbeya, a coin from each and every individual person. The Gemara tells us, and Rashi quotes it on Chumash, Hara lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu matbeya shel esh. God came with a fiery coin, and he said, this is what I want you to take from each person in the Jewish people. What is the significance, asked the Mefarshim, of God coming with a fiery coin and showing him, this is what I want you to take from all the Jewish people? Why don't you just tell him, take a machzis HaShekel, what's so difficult? So some explain that perhaps the idea, the symbolism behind that is that money, on the one hand, can be like fire. It can be destructive. It can be the most powerful tool to destroy a world. It can make people completely corrupt. It can make them very pompous, very high on themselves. It can make them do all sorts of terrible things. But at the same time, where would the world be without fire? Yes, fire is destructive, but where would the world be if we didn't have heating, if we didn't have electricity, if we weren't able to have lights? Where would the world be without fire? So fire, on the one hand, has the most destructive power. It can destroy anything. But on the other hand, at the same token, fire also has the ability to make an unbelievably productive world. It just depends how you use it. If you use fire responsibly, you will have an amazing experience of having light in your home, of having heat in that, of having electricity. If you use fire in a destructive way, it can destroy and totally demolish an amazing world that we have here. And this is what God was showing Moshe Rabbeinu with money as well. Hara lo matbeya shel esh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Moshe Rabbeinu and he showed him, look at the power of money. It's like fire. If you use money in the right way, you know what you can do with it? Let's be honest. Can we have shuls? Can we have institutions? Can we have yeshivas? Can we have schools? Can we have all the wonderful things that we have, which are good for the community? Can we have that without money? Obviously not. But imagine if we misuse money. Imagine if we mishandle the gift of money and we begin to create things which are against everything we stand for. Money can be like fire. And this is what we ask for. On Matzah Shabbos, when we say Hamavdim and Kodesh Lechol, we ask that God give us this opportunity to differentiate between that which is Kodesh and that which is Chol. To understand that even the things in our lives that seem to be mundane, that we should know how to use them properly. Matbea Shalesh. We should know how to use our money properly. Zareinu v'chaspeinu. If we go ahead and we use the money properly, we can prosper as a community. We can have our children growing up to be great Yirei Shamayim, great Talmid HaChachamim. We can hire all the Rebbes, all the Moras, all the tutors in the world. We can make our children as incredible as we want them to be. But it's only if we use our resources properly. And this is specifically why we ask that on Matzah Shabbos, when we recite HaMavdum and Kodesh Lechol, when we realize and we recognize that there's so much that we can differentiate, that we can distinguish as to what is considered profane, what is considered mundane, and what is considered absolutely holy and sacred in our lives. So this is the reason why we say Atachon Antanu. This is the reason why we say Havdalah in the bracha of Atachonin La'adam Das, because it's very closely connected. Like Tosu says, Im Ein Das Havdalah Minayin. If we don't have deep intellect, if we don't have deep insight into the world, we will never be able to have our priorities straight. And we'll fall into that problem, like the Limblina Rav said. We'll have an opportunity for ourselves to make Kiddush out of Chol and to make Chol out of Kodesh. And that's something that will totally skew all of our priorities and everything we're supposed to be doing. We got to a discussion about whether one is supposed to sit or stand for Havdalah. Now this is a major problem. We don't have enough time to get into all the sources. But if you look at number Vav, Tosus writes in Maseches Brachos Daf Mem Gimel that the best thing would be to sit during Havdalah. Look at number Zayin, the Orchas Chaim disagrees with Tosus. He says, let's look at number Zayin on the source sheet. We have the practice, says the Orchas Chaim, to stand up when we are saying Havdalah. We are standing up to show our deep respect for the Melech, to show our deep respect for Darach Leviyah Mumad. Since we know that by Havdalah we're ushering the Shabbos out of our homes, we're telling the Shekhinah, thank you for coming, it's time for you to go back up to the heavens. So therefore, the same way it's appropriate for us to stand up and walk a guest out of the home, this is why the Archas Chaim argues that it's proper to stand up by Havdalah, so to speak, to sort of usher the Shabbos out of our homes in the proper manner, the same way we would for any other guest who comes to our home. So there's two practices that are quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Some say you should stand, some say you should sit. This is something which is depending on your minhag, whatever your family does. But this is the background of both of those minhagim. On the one hand, Tosfos says you should sit. On the other hand, the Orchas Chaim says you should stand. We get to the bracha of Besamim, and we spoke about this in the past, so we won't get too much into it. The bracha of Besamim is the bracha that we recite because we lose our neshama yisera after Shabbos is over, and we somehow have to appease our souls, so we smell a sweet-smelling Besamim to make ourselves feel a little bit better. Why is it, asked the Rishonim, that we don't smell Besamim after Yom Tov, we only smell Besamim and Havdalah after Shabbos? Well, some Rishonim say that we don't have a neshama yisera on Yom Tov. We only get this special neshama yisera on Shabbos. So therefore, if we don't have a neshama yisera, and we don't lose it, so there's no reason to say the Bar Mina B'Samim after Yom Tov, because there's nothing to appease ourselves for, there's nothing that we're losing. That's what some Rishonim say. And the Rashbam says, Shomu Shomayim, how can you say such a thing? You don't have any Shama Yisera on Shabbos and Yom Tov, of course. The same way you have Shama Yisera on Shabbos, you have a Shama Yisera on Yom Tov. And in fact, some Achronim write that this is the reason why we say Nishmas Kol Chai, they quote a Zohar HaKadosh, that the reason why we say Nishmas on both Shabbos and Yom Tov is because you have a Neshama Yisera. And we highlight the fact that our Neshama is something special. So obviously, if we have a Neshama Yisera both on Shabbos and Yom Tov alike, one has to wonder, why is it that we don't recite Besamim after Yom Tov is over? If we lose the Neshama Yisera once Yom Tov goes away, the same way we lose the Neshama Yisera once Shabbos goes away. So this is a major question. The Ramban answers, and the Shemi Shmuel later on, many, many generations later, the son of the Avnei Nezer, answered as follows. On Yom Tov, as we said a few weeks ago, Yom Tov only comes because we invest in it. Yom Tov only comes because we decided that today is Rosh Chodesh, and in 2 weeks is going to be Pesach, and 2 weeks is going to be Sukkot. Shabbos comes whether you like it or not. Shabbos comes every week. It doesn't matter whether we say it's Shabbos today or not. Shabbos is here. So therefore, if Shabbos is easy come, Shabbos is easy go. If you get the Neshama Yisera on Shabbos just by the fact that today is the seventh day of the week, then once the seventh day of the week is over, it leaves. Yom Tov, where we had to invest in it, Yom Tov, where we had to put effort in to make the Yom Tov come, we had to be the ones to come together and say, today is going to be Yom Tov. Therefore, since we invest in it, we don't lose net Neshama Yisera. Since we worked hard on it, it's something that stays with us. It's something that doesn't go away. And therefore, we assume that on Matzah Yom Tov, Says the Ramban, we assume that on Matzah Yom Tov, we don't have to summon because we do not lose that Neshama Yaseir that we created ourselves. Since we worked hard to bring it in, we don't lose it, and therefore we don't need to smell the besamim. We get to the final bracha of Havdalah, which is the Borei Ma'ari Ha'esh. Now, Borei Ma'ari Ha'esh, why is it that we recite this bracha on Matzah Shabbos? So the reason given is because light was created on Matzah Shabbos. What do you mean light was created on Matzah Shabbos? You look through the Torah, first 6 days of creation, light was not created on Matzah Shabbos. Light was created one of the earlier days of creation. So what does it mean? So you look in the Medrash. The Medrash says a very fascinating story. We won't read through it just because we want to end on time. So the Medrash writes in number 8. You can read it later. Medrash writes that Adam HaRishon, when did he do his Aveira? Adam HaRishon was created when? Friday. Right? The seventh day was rest. Seventh day was supposed to be Olam Haba. What happens? Adam HaRishon makes the mistake. And now he does a terrible Aveira. And now, all of a sudden, Adam HaRishon has a problem. He's going through the rest of the day of Shabbos. And all of a sudden, he sees the sun start setting. And he thinks that because I did an Aveira, that's it. It's the end of the world. Sun is going to set. Sun is going away. God is taking away the light from the world. That's it. The world is over. This is what Adam HaRishon, the Medrash goes on to explain the story, that Adam HaRishon was concerned that because he did an Aveira, the world is coming to an end. This is why the sun is setting. The sun is never going to come back again. He didn't know that this is what happens every night. So the Medrash tells us that Adam HaRishon was in a panic. He didn't know what to do. So the Medrash says that God came to him and he brought him two stones. And he took the two stones and he rubbed them against one another. And he taught him how to strike a match. He taught him how to make fire even when it's dark outside. So to commemorate that event, since Or was created, since the creation of matches, of lights, were created on Matzah Shabbos, therefore we make a Borei Ma'ari Ha'esh. Now the Rashba pointed at Tshuva a very interesting question. How come you only make some sort of semblance to the fact that light was created on Matzah Shabbos? Why don't we have on the first day of the week, we should have some sort of special significance to what was created on the first day of creation. The second day of the week, we should say some sort of special bracha to remind us of the fact that on the second day of creation, something was created. Why don't we do every day of the week? How can we only do special on Matzah Shabbos to commemorate the fact that light was created on Matzah Shabbos? This is a very important question. I won't get into the answer, but it's something to consider. Something to think about. Why do we only make a semblance? Why do we only make a remembrance to the fact that light was created on Matzah Shabbos? What about everything else? All the first 6 days of creation also happened. Why do we make some sort of remembrance to that throughout the rest of the week as well? When the Gemara discusses this bracha of Borei Ma'ari Ha'esh, there's a very interesting discussion that the Gemara has. What exactly do I have to benefit from the candle? Now, what does it mean, Borei Ma'ari Ha'esh? Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to recite the bracha ad sheyeosa leoro, until you actually derive benefit from that candle. Now, what does that mean? Getting back, I see some of the people who had a hard time with the halakas neir Shabbos here are not here. So, remind them to listen to this point. One of the main points of the neir Shabbos chiddush nowadays is that since we have electric lights, what are we gaining from our candles? Well, now we come back full circle, you come to the end of the story, we get to Havdalah. What are we gaining if the Gemara assumes that we have to derive some sort of benefit from our candle on Matzah Shabbos? How do we gain benefit if the electric lights are on? So you'll say, why can't we really make Havdalah on the electric lights? The answer is, you're supposed to have a candle that was lit on Matzah Shabbos. That's what you're supposed to make Havdalah on. So these lights were not lit on Matzah Shabbos. Many of our homes have fluorescent lights. So the question is, do we really need to turn off the lights when we recite Havdalah in order that we should really have benefit from the candle that we're lighting? So this is an interesting question. The Gemara is not sure. When we say you have to derive benefit from the candle, what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara says two opinions. Either it means you have to actually really be close enough to derive benefit from the candle, one opinion, or you have to be in a way that if you would be close enough, you'd be able to derive benefit. But even though I'm far away and right now where I stand, I can't derive benefit, but I would easily be able to, so that would be good enough. So this is a question that the Gemara has. What does it mean that you have to derive benefit from the candle? Does it mean you really, literally have to be able to derive benefit right now? Or does it mean that theoretically I would be able to derive benefit? This is the question that the Gemara has. We generally assume in Shulchan Aruch that you have to be able to derive actual benefit. This is why in my parents' home, They turn the lights off by Havdalah. Many people have this practice. Many Svarim write like that, that maybe you should turn the lights off for Havdalah, because if we assume that in order to recite a Bari Mari Ha'esh, you have to have actual benefit from the candle, so therefore maybe it would make sense to turn the lights off. Okay, that's an interesting question. But there's a more important question, which I assume is going to be a little bit surprising. So this is something we need to get into, just for the last few minutes. And that goes as follows. In order to appreciate this question, let's just give a little bit of background. There are three different types of brachas that we find throughout the year. One is what we call a birchas hanenen. Birchas hanenen means, whenever I derive benefit from something, I have to recite a bracha. For example, I derive benefit from a cup of water. Right now I would actually love one. So you have to go ahead and recite a bracha before drinking the water. You have to recite a bracha before eating something. That's what we call a birchas hanenen. When do you recite that bracha, before or after? You always have to recite it before. Like the Gemara says in brachas daf lamed hey, if I eat something without saying a bracha, it's as if I'm stealing from God Himself. So says the Gemara, whenever you derive benefit by eating, you have to recite the bracha before deriving the benefit. We have a second bracha called a birchas hashvach. What does that mean? Birchas hashvach means, for example, I go to Niagara Falls, I'm so overwhelmed by this incredible experience that I have of seeing Niagara Falls. I go to the Grand Canyon, I can't believe what I'm seeing. I go to something very special, or I hear thunder, I hear lightning, I recite a bracha. What happens? Do you first see it and then recite the bracha? Or do you first recite the bracha and then look? So what you first do is, you first look at Niagara Falls, you're totally overwhelmed by the sight that you're seeing, and then, in response, you recite a bracha. So birchas hanenen, again, birchas hanenen must be recited before you derive the benefit. Birchas hashvach you recite after you derive the benefit. Why? Because you're so taken by the scene that you're experiencing, so that evokes an emotion of wanting to recite a bracha, birchas hashvach, of saying, look at the world God created, it's so incredibly amazing. We have a third kind of bracha, which is a birchas hamitzvah. Before I shake lulav, before I go ahead and blow the shofar, before I do all sorts of things, I have to recite a bracha. So that also we assume over lasiyasin. The Gemara says, Msachem and Dabzayin, you have to recite a bracha on a mitzvah before performing the mitzvah. What if I shake lulav and I forget to recite a bracha before? That's a major machlokas in the Rishonim, the Rambam and the Or Zeruah, the Rambam and others. Should I recite a bracha after I'm done, or should we assume, no, it's too late. Once you do the mitzvah, it's too late. The same way, once I eat the bread, I'm not allowed to recite the bracha after I'm already finished eating. So this is an important question. When it comes to the bracha of Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos, and we get to the bracha of Bori Mori Ha'esh, how do we classify, how do we categorize this bracha of Bori Mori Ha'esh? What would you say? What kind of bracha is it? Is it a birchas hanenin or a birchas hashvach? What? Oh, so you're arguing that if I have to actually have benefit from the light, like the Gemara says, so then it should be a birchas hanenin. Birchas hanenin would dictate that what? You have to recite the bracha first, and only then do you put your hands in front of the candle and derive the benefit, right? However, let me ask you, how come every morning when you wake up, you don't recite a birchas hanenin on the light? Why do we only make it on Matzah Shabbos? If in fact, the Rishonim asked, it's not my question, it's the Ramban's question. If in fact we assume that on Matzah Shabbos the bracha is simply a birchas hanen, in the same way I would make a bracha before drinking a cup of water, so too I would recite a bracha before looking at this candle. Then ask the Ramban, kol shaita b'shaita mechuyev levruche. Every time I open my eyes, I should say, Baruch Ata Hashem, Borei Mori Ha'esh, look how beautiful, look at this light. If all it is a birchas hanen, I should recite this 100 times a day. The same way if I take 100 cups of water, I recite a bracha, I should do this every day also. Say the Rishonim, the Ramban, the Rosh, other Rishonim say this also, and this is what the Mishnah Berurah writes as well. This bracha is not a birchas hanenin. This bracha is rather a birchas hashvach. Again, like we said, the reason why we recite this bracha on Matzah Shabbos is because we assume that this is when the light was created. This is when God showed Adam HaRishon how to do it. And to commemorate that event, the incredible power of fire, the incredible power of light, to commemorate that great gift that God gave us, we recite a birchas hashvach. The same way when we look at Niagara Falls, we would recite a bracha. Same way when we go to the Grand Canyon, we would recite a bracha. So too, when we look at the light and we commemorate the fact that light was created, it's not because we're deriving benefit, but rather because we're so enthralled by the fact that God created such an incredible gift and He gave it to us. So this is why we have the Bori Mori Ha'esh, which would follow that when would you recite the bracha? After you actually derive the benefit. So this is the question. When am I supposed to go like this? When do I put my hands up? Do I put my hands up before I recite the bracha Bori Mari Ha'ish? Or do I put my hands up after I recite the bracha Bori Mari Ha'ish? This is a very good question. Well, if you assume that it's a birchas hanehenin, if you assume it's like drinking a cup of water, and that's why I'm reciting the bracha, then you'll first recite the bracha and only afterward put your hands up. The same way you recite the bracha before you drink the cup of water. If you assume, however, that it's a birchas hashvach, that we're saying thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for creating such an amazing power in the world of fire and giving it over to us, and this is why we only commemorate it once a week, not because we're having benefit from the light, but rather because we're reminding ourselves of the great power of this world and how intricate all the systems of the world actually are and how thankful we are for having it. Well, that's just a birchas hashvach. And if it's a birchas hashvach, one should really go like this first and only afterward recite the bracha Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. The same way we would do by looking at the Grand Canyon, same way we would do by many other things. So this is a discussion. This is something many of the Rishonim assume, that it's only a birchas hashvach, and therefore we should recite the bracha only after we derive the incredible gift of light. So we should first look at our fingernails, only afterward recite the Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. And there are some who assume that we should do it the way that many might be accustomed to do so. Let's just close. I think it's a beautiful way to close the series. It highlights a little bit about Kiddush and Havdalah, not only on Shabbos, but really in everything that we do. And that is, we have a pasuk that tells us about the different kosher birds. Moshe Rabbeinu was shown, these birds are kosher, these birds are not kosher. These are the ones you're allowed to eat, these are the ones you are not permitted to eat. So if you look in this entry over here, the last one, it's a quote from the Shalach HaKadosh. So he writes, "B'meseches Chagiga Chavzayin Amud Beis, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Da'amri Chavayu." He's quoting a Gemara where two Amoraim, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, said, "Bizman Shabeis Hamikdash Kayam, when the Beis Hamikdash was around, Mizbeach Mechaper Al Yisrael. How did we get an atonement for our sins? The Mizbeach. We brought a carbon to the Beis Hamikdash, and the Mizbeach was able to offer an atonement for our avers, for our sins. Achsha, but nowadays that we have no Beis HaMikdash, what are you going to say? We cannot get an atonement for our sins? Can't be. Says the Gemara, Achsha, Shulchano shel Adam mechaper alav. A person's table is able to give them a forgiveness. What does that mean? Nimtza, says the Shalah. What it means is, Achilos tahoros hamutaros, shora aleihem kedusha elyona. If we are careful to eat kosher food, if we're careful what we put in our mouths, if we're careful to recite a bracha before doing so, that will be shora aleihem kedusha elyona. We have actually had an experience with the Shekhinah if we're careful in the way that we eat. That's the same as having an experience of going to the Mizbeach and offering a korban. V'amru chazal sheneskasha Moshe b'har Elohim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu, when God was telling him the rules of which animals are kosher and which are not, Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time understanding it. So what do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't figure out how to understand the difference between a kosher animal and a non-kosher animal? Explains the Shalah. Manas kasha b'zeh. What was his difficulty? Why was it so hard? We explained to Moshe Rabbeinu all the halachas of the Torah. He had no problem. All of a sudden he gets to this halacha of figuring out the kosher birds and the non-kosher birds. He can't figure out what it means. Says the Shalah, what it means is, Elah ha'inyin niskasha Moshe b'tam ha'inyin. Means he didn't understand. Lama zeh asr la zeh mutter. Why is it some creations of God are allowed to be eaten and some aren't? V'her Elohim HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe sod ruchniyasam v'kocham l'mala. God actually went ahead and he showed him that each individual piece of kosher food that you eat has something special that it can give you. And he goes on to explain that this is what it means, v'yechazu es Elokim v'yochlu v'yishtu. What it means is that there are times that we can go ahead and have such a mundane experience, such as eating, which is shared with animals alike. It's not something that only human being does. It's something that's shared with the animal kingdom as well. But vayechazu as Elokim, vayochlu vayishtu. We can have an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can have a close and intimate connection with God, even when we're eating and drinking. And then he goes to the last paragraph. You see, last three lines. Hine ksiv, lahavdil bein hatamei uvein hatoher. We are asked to differentiate between what is tamei and what is tahor? Nusach haHavdalah haMavdim in Kodesh Lachol ben Yisrael laAmim. The nusach that we say in Havdalah is haMavdim in Kodesh Lachol ben Ar Lachoshech ben Yisrael laAmim. Ratzal Lomar. Here's the key word: שיש הבדל בין כל די ישראל לכל די עמים.
Obviously, our davening is different than the Umas HaOlam. They don't daven. Obviously, our mitzvahs are different than them. That's not what we highlight. You know what we highlight? That the Chol di Yisrael is different than the Chol of the Amen. The way we encounter mundane experiences, the way we come away from them, is so incredibly different than the way all the rest of the world does. Just to close, the story is told of three Hasidim who were totally enamored by their each respective Rebbes, and each one wanted to argue whose Rebbe is the most authentic, whose Rebbe is the most legitimate one over the rest. So they began to share Rebbe Shemaiselach. Each one wants to show off about how great his Rebbe is. So the first one wakes up and he says, you know, my Rebbe was once traveling on his horse and buggy, as all good Rebbes used to travel, and suddenly there was a terrifying downpour, a deluge, the heavens opened up and it was pouring cats and dogs. So what do? The horse obviously can't travel in the rain, so the Rebbe steps off of his wagon, and he offers a short tefillah, and all of a sudden, there was rain to the right, there was rain to the left, there was a clear path in the middle. Can you imagine? Such an incredible miracle. So, how's his friend going to top that? So the second chassid gets up and he says, you know what happened? One time, my Rebbe was traveling in his horse and buggy, and it was starting to get dark outside. What do? Horse can't travel when it's dark, and they didn't have any lights. So the Rebbe gets off of his wagon, and he offers a very short tefillah, and all of a sudden, it's dark to the right, dark to the left, and the sun is shining in the middle. They kept traveling. Incredible. So the third chassid gets up and he says, you know, you guys haven't heard anything yet. One time, my Rebbe was traveling on the road in his horse and buggy, and the problem was it was very close to Shkia, and it was Erev Shabbos. What are you going to do? You're not allowed to travel on Shabbos. So he gets off, and he offers a tefillah, and all of a sudden, it was Shabbos to the right, Shabbos to the left, weekday in the middle. What's amazing is that what would be the most incredible miracle of all them would be to be living in our world, having the experiences that we all have, having chol to the right, chol to the left, and figuring out how to make a path of kodesh in the middle. Figuring out how to be mavdi ben kodesh the chol. Figuring out how to take a complicated world that we live in with all the mundane experiences that we all have, and figuring out how to make a difference, a distinction between the Chol de Yisrael and the Chol de Amen. That's what the Shalah HaKodesh tells us our job is. That's really what it means, Hamabda ben Kodesh Lechol. God teaches us how to make a separation between the way we go about our Chol activities, the way we act in our businesses, the way we file our tax returns, the way that we do everything that we do. Every mundane activity, every experience that we have, there's a way to do it with Kedusha V'Tahara. Even though it's Chol. Even though the rest of the world is doing the same thing. But we have a way of going about it which is so incredibly different and so much more powerful and meaningful than anything else that anyone else is doing. This is really what we're supposed to come away from when we talk about the importance of Kiddush, the importance of Havdalah. That Kiddush and Havdalah is not something that's only separate, that's only unique to Shabbos. Kiddush and Havdalah is a mandate that we have to make every experience that we have on this world one of Kiddush, one of Havdalah, one of understanding that there's a difference, that there's a distinction, there's a difference between Yisrael and Amim, there's a difference between Chol de Yisrael and Chol de Amim, and there's a way that we're supposed to be going about each and everything that we do. Thank everyone again for participating in all of our programs this summer, and we look forward to many, many more.